From Indian Mounds Wilderness to Davis Mountains State Park and South Padre Island to the Golden Spread, when Texans learn what's happening, it's From Pratt on Texas. Get ready. Here comes Robert Pratt.
From the True Texan Studio, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is the Texas Hour from Pratt on Texas. Be sure to remember, you can listen on your schedule anytime, anywhere. The show's now podcast. Just download it and shift it to whenever you want to hear it. All right, my friends, our Lone Star story of the day. Did the Texas legislature, did legislators just run out of time to get key business handled? Or are they part of a trend over the last few sessions of working less and less? Our Lone Star story of the day, sponsored by Allied Compliance Services, providing the best in service in DOT business and personal drug and alcohol testing since 1995. AlliedCompliance.com is where you learn more. Also, a lot of other things out of the legislature. And what most have missed, I mentioned it yesterday, they're still missing it in most press stories. They missed it in all of them yesterday. What they've missed about Governor Abbott's legislative pay veto threat. Also, great pro-life news out of Lubbock. We've got sales tax and economic news of Texas. And were those so-called anti-Paxton Office of Attorney General whistleblowers just blowing smoke to the media for a political play? Well, my friends, turns out now that there's appeals ongoing on all of this stuff over their whistleblower status, the fact is they didn't say the same things under oath that they said to the media, just as we thought. As always, it is, my friends, a great day to be a Texan. And in Texas history today, 1873, the legislature declared the existence of Wegfarth or Wedgefarth County. That's right. You never heard of it? Well, that's because there were a lot of them they said they declared in extant and then didn't actually pulled them back later. This is the date in 1875 the Comanche surrendered to U.S. troops at Fort Sill, which ended the Red River War and opened the panhandle to settlers. So there you go. Now, howdy, folks. State Fair of Texas will return after being closed last year because of the COVID scare. Gates open September 24th and run through October 17th. And that's the theme this year. What Big Tex always says, howdy, folks. Great news out of Lubbock. Two stories. The federal court dismissed Planned Parenthood's case against the city of Lubbock over the new pro-life ordinance. District Judge James Wesley Hendricks dismissed it without prejudice, meaning they can refile. But he said the plaintiffs failed to show, as they must, that they have Article III standing to sue the city. Court dismisses the case for lack of jurisdiction at this point. And then far better news, that keeps the case, their case out of federal court for now. Better news is that human lives are being saved at present. That's right. Yesterday, Planned Parenthood, organization that exists primarily to end the lives of human beings in the womb, Planned Parenthood has said, well, there's too much risk now with this ordinance, so I guess it does work. Due to the controversial ordinance passed May 1, Lubbock residents are currently required to travel to access safe legal abortion. Well, there's no such thing as a safe abortion. It ends in the death of the child. How is that safe? Anyway, they've quit killing babies in the womb right now. And oh my God, somebody might have to travel somewhere. Oh, we don't want anybody. Oh, it's such a burden to and an inconvenience for somebody to have to drive somewhere to kill a baby. It's just disgusting, but it's great news because human lives are being saved right now because Lubbock citizens acted. Sadly, their city council did not. And you need to remember that come election time. But the court dismissed their lawsuit for lack of standing at the moment. Now, I want to get to, I'll get to the Ken Paxton Attorney General story in a moment. Let's bring the sales tax numbers out from the comptroller, just the state totals. They were up really high, $3.4 billion in May. This is from all this pent-up consumer spending. Most of that happened in April, the spending, and it was the highest monthly total ever. And, of course, it was a 30.1% increase over May of last year, and, of course, that's because a year ago the collections had plummeted to record levels because of the pandemic and the lockdown that Governor Abbott put us in. But they were up compared to the previous year, 2019, up 12.9% over May of 2019. So it's good news, And that is a good sign of how much economic activity is happening. Now, the Dallas Fed's out with the Texas service sector report and the retail sector. Service sector growth continued in May, but slower than in April. That's the same as we announced yesterday in the manufacturing sector. People in the sector reflect optimism this month in the pressure, wage and price pressures hitting everybody. The retail sector did not do as well. Retail sales activity fell in May. That's right. Labor market indicators were mixed in May. Continued growth in employment, but little change in work week length. Retailers' perceptions of broader business conditions remained optimistic, but there was softening compared with April. Retailers saw further acceleration of price pressures and elevated wage pressures. This is the inflation we're beginning to see again. Now, let's switch to this big story in a press release. Now, obviously, it's their side, but they're quoting some facts they have now they didn't have before at the Attorney General's office. And this is not Ken Paxton's personal case. This is an official case against the state by these so-called whistleblowers that aren't. So it's out on an official press release. OAG, the Office of Attorney General, files appellate brief. Former top aides say one thing under oath, another in public. Can't squeeze back into agency after failing on the job. Here's the presser. Yesterday, the Office of Attorney General of Texas filed an appellate brief with the Austin-based Third Court of Appeals, fully debunking a group of former OAG political appointees who had gone, which is another reason these people, they're at-will employees, they can't sue and for whistleblower status and get their jobs back. They're political appointees. Anyway, debunking a group of former political appointees who had gone rogue and lodged unfounded accusations against Attorney General Paxton. The appeal arises out of, and by the way, Third Court of Appeals now ran by Democrats too, so this has got to play its way up to a court that's not all political. The appeal arises out of a Travis County District Court's erroneous denial of the OAG's plea to the jurisdiction. Office of Attorney General's appellate brief argues the group of former appointees have no right under Texas law to force their way back into the agency after failing in the basic duties and responsibilities of their jobs. Most importantly, the brief reveals a total contradiction between what the rogue appointees have alleged in public, meaning to the press, and what they said under oath. Notably, Jeff Mateer, remember he was the former number two executive there? Remember, these are all political appointees. They're not civil servants. They have no right to get their jobs back or whistleblower status or anything. They're at will. He swore under oath that Paxton committed no actual crimes. Rather, Mateer had only mentioned, quote, he had, quote, had potential concerns. Folks, that's like saying, well, that guy across the street, he might beat his wife 20 years from now. Adding without elaboration or specificity that there might be issues if they had gone down a certain path. In other words, I have potential concerns if the Attorney General goes down a certain path. Now, he told the public and the media that there was felonies being committed, but when he was under oath where he could face prosecution, the story changed dramatically, folks. They write, but bare allegations of hypothetical future problems aren't enough to blow the proverbial whistle. When asked whether Mateer came to believe that the Office of Attorney General was being engaged in ongoing criminal activity, Mateer was unable to give a yes or no. What he would say is, it could have led to that. However, that speculation about or unfounded fears over what might happen in the future, especially when any doubts could have been alleviated by asking a few questions, isn't enough under the law and certainly isn't enough to justify what these former aides did. It was all a political setup, folks. These seven people, they launched a smear campaign against the Attorney General, and they're a bunch of lawyers. And when they got under oath in this case, they're telling a very different story, very different story than what they told the press. As I suspected in the beginning, these claims of felonies and stuff probably wouldn't go anywhere, and it looks like they're probably not going to. We'll see.
More from the True Texan Studio after this.
I've told you about my wonderful experience with Dr. Sylvia Zuniga in dental care in Costa Rica. Not only was it among the most positive experiences and best dental work I've experienced, my trip to Costa Rica, one of the hottest tourist destinations on the planet, included a top hotel for a week, fancy dinners, airfare for both Isabel and me, and even a private driver in the entire bill. Total spending was less than half of the best quote I got at home, a quote that was for much less dental work than I obtained from Dr. Zuniga. A couple from Lubbock now knows what I mean. They wrote to say, we used your suggestion to go to Sylvia in Costa Rica. She was wonderful. Instead of $7,400, I spent $1,640, and not only for my dental work, but for my husband's too. It was a refreshing adventure, and she guided us in things to do. Thank you for letting listeners know. If you have big dental needs and challenges, learn more about Dr. Sylvia Zuniga and dental care by clicking the banner at prattontexas.com. See Sylvia's beautiful face and click the banner at my website, prattontexas.com.
It's the show everyone listens to, even if they don't admit it. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Texas Hour on Pratt on Texas. Lieutenant Governor Patrick was out on Fox News on Bill Hemmer's program, and he had more to say, and he's right. I mean, all this failure to get our stuff done, you know, you lose a bill here or two, but the complete mess up on the session is in the hands of the Speaker. And he also gave aid and comfort to the enemy, the Democrats, which is what you heard me say yesterday, because I had read enough to figure this out, and now the lieutenant governor goes on national news and explains it. Here it is, Dan Patrick speaking.
We have a bill or a rule in Texas that says if a speaker or the lieutenant governor, I control the Senate, believes Democrats or anyone would walk, we could lock the doors to keep them in, or we can send the state police to get them back. But the Speaker of the House, and this is the second part of this bill, the Speaker of the House told the Democrats earlier that evening he would not lock the doors, he would not send the state police, and then he didn't set this bill until 4 hours to go till midnight, which made it easy for them to walk out. So I blame this on the Speaker, who is
okay.
a Republican,
all right.
I blame it on the Democrats for just walking away and saying, I can't win the vote, so I'm going home.
So indeed, my friends, it's just as we thought. And did lawmakers, it's like I said yesterday, these people don't fight for us. Why do these members keep electing these speakers who don't represent what they claim to represent to voters and then won't fight for a conservative or even a Republican agenda? It's sickening. That's what we've got right now. And all these guys that hitch their wagon to the current speaker realize this speaker aided and abetted essentially the Democrats doing something that's wrong. They were supposed to be in the body, not supposed to be able to leave. Did lawmakers really run out of time? Jeremy Kitchen at the Scorecard had a good piece on that. Did they really run out of time to pass conservative priorities? The legislature's allotted 140 days to complete their work for regular legislative session. The first 60 preclude them from considering any legislation that's not an emergency priority of the governor's, according to the Constitution. Even then, it's up to the legislature to determine what technically fits into the broad policy area the governor lays out. This legislative session began 12 January and ended 31 May. The bill filing deadline was 12 March, or 60 days into the 140-day session. But remember, most legislators had the ability to pre-file bills since November 9th of 2020, 64 days before it began. Governor gave his biennial state of the address late in February 1st, 20 days after the legislature convened. That allowed for about 35 days or so for the legislature to act solely on those issues he laid out as emergency items. It's true that severe winter storm precluded them from doing so in mid-February and certainly changed the focus of the leadership in both the legislative chambers, but they had time. They still had a lot of time to work on it. Brass tacks are the legislature chose not to act on any of the legislative priorities, any of these emergency things, at all within the first 60 days, which meant they instead consumed time in the remaining 80 days of the session. The House of Reps assigned members to committees on February 4th. Remember, they convened on the 12th of January, and the speaker race was already settled. Remember that. We didn't have the delay of not having a speaker. Remember, he said, oh, I got the Democrats with me. You know, violating the pledge, all these people like Burroughs and Frank had made signing that pledge not to elect a speaker with Democrat influence. Nevertheless, the speaker race was done. There's no reason they couldn't have assigned committees much quicker. They convened on the 12th of January. He was elected speaker, and they waited till February 4th to assign committees. The Senate assigned committees on January 15th, 3 days in. In total, the Texas House of Reps convened 77 days of the 140 days allotted. Of those 77, they convened the body for about 313 hours. How does that stack up against the Senate? Well, let's go look. The Senate convened. It's a much smaller body. 61 days of the 140 allotted. Of those days, they convened for 232 hours. And, you know, so given the fact the Senate's a much smaller body, that fits. So what are the trends? Let's look at the trends on this. In the 87th legislature, remember, these happen every 2 years, the House convened for 77 days. In the 86th session in 2019, it was 76 days. In the 85th session in 2017, it was 86 days. In the 84th, it was 86 days. In the 83rd, it was 84 days. In the 82nd, back in 2011, it was 91 days. In other words, there is a massive trend here that's easy to spot of legislators convening to actually be able to vote on bills in the floor a tremendous fewer days, 91 days in 2011. Then it drops to 84 in 2013. Then for two sessions in a row, it's only 86 days. Let me give you an idea of number of hours. In 2011, they convened in the House for 472 hours. They've been under 400 hours, which is massive. I mean, this is 472 hours. They've been way under 400 hours most years, including, they were up to 394 in the last session, but this year they were only there 313 hours, 77 days. So there's a long trend, ladies and gentlemen, of working less and less. And they control those clocks, but other than the 140 days and that first 30. And remember, they could have handled those. Governor had so many items on the emergency agenda, a lot of these big priority bills fell in them. They could have worked on that stuff early. They're just working less and less on the floor, year after year after year. Now, the Senate has had not that. If you look, their number of hours has remained about constant. 2011 was 273 hours. That was high, probably because of redistricting. But they were 192 hours the next year, 240, then 264, then 248, then 232. And they're a much smaller body. They got a lot more done. They convened nine times, though, only nine times in the first 60 days of the session. Now, there's good context here by the author. It's important to know that much of the disparity in time spent convened is likely due to self-imposed rules by each chamber precluding the normal recognitions and consideration of resolutions, congratulating and memorializing everyday Texans across the state as part of the COVID protocols. This, in its own right, likely deserves some consideration to whether it's in and of itself an efficient use of time. So because COVID, they didn't do as much of that. They waste a lot of time on that stuff. At the end of the legislative session, two of the governor's emergency legislative items did not get across the finish line. This included the omnibus election integrity bill, which died due to the quorum busting from the Democrats that the speaker allowed, which he, under the rules, wasn't supposed to allow. This was day 139 of the 140-day session, a whole 118 days after Abbott announced it as an emergency priority. Bills seeking to reform bail practices like House Bill 20 and House Joint Resolution 4 died ultimately because the House never adopted the conference committee reports in time. Same can be said for several legislative priorities of activists across the state, you know, including the Republican Party of Texas. It just continued. And the House took that big break and wiped out a ton of bills. A lot of these bills could have been avoided. The killing of these bills could have been avoided if the time was used more efficiently. And I like the last line, of course, some may question whether it's purposefully not used more efficiently. And that's really it. They control the clocks. They control the convening. They control these deadlines. And what I want you to understand is this is a phenomenon. You can just watch. You can just look at the number of days that they've convened to actually have calendar votes, meaning voting on bills. In 2011, 91 days, 84 days 2 years later, 86 days, 86 days, that's two sessions in a row, down to 76 days in 2019, and only up one day this time, 77 days. And remember, the speaker called that three-day temper tantrum break a week back before it was over and just killed a whole host of priority bills. So don't believe the lies. The clock didn't get them. They used the clock purposely to not have to take a vote on these things. Back in a moment.
He gets so much in during the show, you can handle a short break. Pratt's back in a moment.
If providing health insurance for yourself or your employees is costing more than you can afford, listen closely to this message.
I think one of the challenges that all small business owners are facing today is while they may be less than 50 employees, they're still competing with the big box companies that have full-blown benefit plans.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
And with the price almost reaching the point of unaffordability, employers are looking for solutions. And my out-of-the-box thinking is providing a solution. We enrolled a local company, and we were able to save that employer one-third of his budget, which was equal to a little over $100,000 that he was paying prior to working with my agency.
Life, Health, Dental. With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. Hurley Benefit Services is independently owned, and they're online at hurleybenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y benefits.com.
You've heard about their politics all day. Now it's time for ours. It's Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas. So on Bill Hamer's show on Fox News, the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, pointed out they just blew it in the House. They didn't use time well, and then the Speaker, in a way, colluded, I would say, with the Democrats on their big quorum busting. Here's another soundbite. I already used one in the last segment. This is another soundbite, a shorter version summarizing that from Lieutenant Governor Patrick.
They just simply said, we're walking out because we don't like the fact that we're going to lose this vote. And unfortunately, the Speaker set that bill to come up on the floor 4 hours before the deadline and told them they could leave if they wanted. Well, what did he think was going to happen?
Yeah.
So then we come to the big Associated Press piece by the liberal writes the politics for them, the Associated Propagandist. Texas GOP to revive voting bill, comma, Democrats plot next move. Well, it's talking about Governor Abbott prepared to call lawmakers back for a special session to revive the voting measure that died when Democrats staged a dramatic walkout from the state capitol just before the end of the legislative session Sunday night. Bolstered by GOP majorities in both House and Senate, Abbott was also weighing whether to use extra session to take up other top conservative priorities that had failed during the session. Well, he'll name a special session and that'll be it. And it'll be soon or middle of the summer or fall. It doesn't really matter. It's all the same politics either way. But, you can't get the truth out of it. They said, well, it banned early voting on Sunday mornings when many black worshipers go to the polls after services. Isn't this a new claim we've never heard before? Actually, I love this, but bare-knuckled Republican governing is a way of life in the Texas Capitol. Republican bare knuckle. It's all Texas. There are books written before Republicans ever got elected in anything about how it's a brass knuckles, bare knuckled blood sport in Texas. It's always been the way it is in the legislative chamber. But see how the AP tries to make it look? Well, that's just since Republicans ran it. Let me tell you, I was around when Democrats ran it, and it was even nastier Democrat on Democrat. The governor said he would veto the part of the budget that funds legislators' salaries, a move that could impact not just Democrats, but other Capitol staff. Let me explain something here. There's all kinds of stories. Oh, it'll hurt the staffers. Like, we care. Some of them are friends of mine, but they get it. Come on. What most people are missing is there's no immediate threat here. I'm reading stories that seem to imply that they won't get their paychecks for all this work. He can only veto next year's budget. It doesn't take effect until September. Got all kinds of time for special sessions. Even if he pushed it off into September, he could hold up their pay. If he set the special session for the first part of September, he could use that as kind of a sword of Damocles to hold over their heads and still get everybody taken care of in a week or so. This big boy on campus threat, Abbott, the bear in the teeth, isn't much of a threat if you actually know what's going on. Republicans may also enter a 30-day special session with not just commanding majorities, but new leverage. Well, they go on to talk about Lieutenant Governor Patrick and claim that the election bill scaled back ways to vote. It does not. It does not. These things they're calling scaled back ways to vote were never legal to begin with. We're just making it clear in the law that drive-through voting and 24-hour voting wasn't legal. And then you get to this interesting part about this Sunday morning early voting, because none of the bill had ever had any reduction in early voting. In fact, we had 2 hours of early voting mandated in the bill. But there was this weird thing where all of a sudden you can't vote on Sunday till like 1 p.m. Trav Clardy, the boy from Lubbock, state rep from Nacogdoches, who's turned out to be a very liberal Republican at best, really more Democrat light. And of course, who does he go to talk to? NPR, because that's probably what he listens to. He said that was just a typo, that it was supposed to say no voting earlier than 11 a.m., and it just got a 1 p.m. there, and he didn't explain how the 1 being left out changed p.m. to a.m. or a.m. to p.m., but anyway. But that's interesting, because Senator Brian Hughes, who authored the bill, never made a mention of such a mistake being there. He simply said election workers want to go to church, too. They were trying to make it so election workers, because we have a real hard time hiring people. Can you imagine in Harris County? People, a lot of our folks are retired and older folks, and they want to go to church on Sunday morning. But if they're going to be the election people for 2 weeks of early voting, they got to be open in that. So, you know, the Democrats, all of a sudden we found out this was a racist ploy, because suddenly we've been told for the first time in my life, by the way, and I've been involved in voter turnout and all kinds of strategy, for the first time in my, I've never heard this before, but all of a sudden it's because black people statistically turn out in massive droves after church on Sunday. Well, I have gone to quite a few black churches. They're not all the same. But a lot of it's also very common that church services don't end until 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So how would it have hurt that? I'm just saying, it's all made up stuff. Pound, I know we're supposed to say hashtag, but that's not right. It's a pound symbol. It's hashtags, it's function and programming. Hashtag Abbott failed Texas again. Trends online after governor calls to defund state legislature. Of course, big story in the Express News. Abbott has till 20 June to decide whether he'll veto that line item, veto the legislative pay. Again, that doesn't have anything to do with now or this year, this fiscal year. Wouldn't it have anything to do with it until September when the state enters the new biennium? Dan Patrick pointing out that the Senate passed 28 of the 29 priorities he identified, minus the redistricting bills that'll be addressed in the fall. 20 were signed into law. The Senate was working. ERCOT, Energy Security Reform, Power Grid Winterization, Star Spangled Banner Protection Act, Statewide Broadband Access Act, which I think is stupid, and it's because they don't understand what's happening in the free market. Pandemic Liability Protection for Business, the Heartbeat Bill, Abortion Ban Trigger, Stop Oil and Gas Investment Boycotts, Personal Data Protection, Protect Texas Trucking, Protecting Second Amendment businesses, Stop Corporate Gun Boycotts, Second Amendment Protections for Travelers, First Responders Pandemic Care Act, Stop Local Law Enforcement Defunding, Law Enforcement Transparency Act, Family Nursing and Home and Hospital Visitation Rights, Protect Our Freedom to Worship, and Remove Racist Restrictions from Real Estate Deeds. And they also passed some other critical priorities. Constitutional carry, ban on teaching critical race theory, the Tim Tebow sports bill, those homeschoolers and UIL activities, statewide camping ban in cities for the bums. And they got the spending cap out, which was a big deal. Senate did a lot. The House didn't do its job, folks. It's just they can spend this all day, and your state reps, including some who are friends of mine, you know, they go home with the talking points. Some of them are involved in writing the talking points, and it's a lot of bull. They just don't meet and convene and get to work early and convene enough days anymore. When you're talking about one evening being the difference between major omnibus bills that they've worked hard on all session, when the Democrats can walk out for 4 or 5 hours and kill it, doesn't that explain to you how important just one day of convening is? And then the week before, the speaker in a fit with some other members to stick it to the Senate, what they did was stuck it to the people of Texas. They simply shut down for 3 days when they had full calendars of bills to vote on set. And those were supposed to be workhorse days. And they just quit. One day of hearing bills is massive, the way it works, the way they stupidly push everything back to the end. They The speaker aided and abetted these Democrats leaving when he could have locked the doors and kept them there, had them arrested and brought back to the chamber. He didn't care. He told them they could go. He went to the back of the room, as I explained yesterday. Go listen to the podcast if you missed the show. He went to the back room and caucused in their little meeting where they were planning this. So is he any kind of Republican at all? Does he? I mean, we're talking about the bill they killed being the, and others, but the election integrity bill. Is he right there with CNN and everybody else? Oh, there's no voter fraud. We don't need to tighten up election integrity. That's all I can figure out of it. What can you figure out of it? We'll be back with more news of Texas in a moment on Pratt on Texas.
Pratt on Texas returns after we hear from the folks who make the show possible.
I tell you, my heart really goes out to those like me who are self-employed.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
Self-employed individuals have really been the very cornerstone of my agency.
If you're self-employed, you have a special health insurance problem.
I'm trying to help the individual out there who makes too much to qualify for any help, any subsidy or benefits from the government towards their health insurance, but does not have the income to pay the incredibly high premiums we find if you're buying your insurance individually. I'm a policyholder myself. I sleep better at night knowing that I have this coverage in place in a way that won't break the bank and allows me to keep my family covered if something tragic does happen.
Life, health, dental. With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. Hurley Benefit Services is independently owned, and they're online at hurleybenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y benefits.com.
Here's a man who feels sorry for those needing to make their country great again. Texas has always been great. It's Robert Pratt of Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas. I've got so much in just the political, you know, campaign type stuff stacked. I got to get some of it out because Land Commissioner P. Bush is having a party in Austin tonight where he's going to announce which office he's running for in 2022. Of course, you know, he's been saying he'd challenge Attorney General Paxton. He's a big fan of the guessing game. He did that in 2014. He went around the state campaigning, running only for a statewide office, not telling us which. But then, as my friend Michael Quinn Sullivan writes at the Scorecards Texas Minute, back then he was only known as the son of a Florida governor, nephew and grandson of two former presidents. Now he's known as the land commissioner who presided over the Alamo debacle. Republican primary voters will decide in 2022 if they want to promote him to whatever office he's seeking. I guess it is possible Mr. Bush will announce for re-election to land commissioner. To quote George P.'s dad, Jeb, please clap. You know, who's excited about this except that little inside crowd of Bushies? Democrats did fend off the challenge in the heavily Democrat district in New Mexico for Congress yesterday in around Albuquerque, where the crime rate is astronomical. It looks like the Dem pulled 60% of the vote and the Republican 36% of the vote and the other two in the race, a total of four. It's not a blowout victory, but it's not a squeaker. It's just about exactly how the district's drawn, so we really don't win much or learn much from that. Yesterday, I didn't even mention it, Trump endorsed Governor Abbott for re-election, and the real Trump guy, Huffines, whose brother and he raised money for Trump and their children worked on the Trump campaign, came out and said, I'm the real Trump candidate. Look, we've seen this all over the country where Trump has endorsed people who, for whatever, he just doesn't have any kind of disciplined political organization under him. And we've seen this over and over, where he even endorsed senators who were the part of the problem in Washington. And I don't know if it's just tribal. If they never said anything bad about him and praised him on TV, he likes that. It's very odd. Again, this is another type race there's no reason to get involved in at this point. And it is true, no matter what you think of Abbott or Huffines, I'm not taking a position there. It's just that, any way you look at it, Huffines is the Trump-style candidate and has a record to prove it. Abbott's the insider guy with the old Bushy advisors and everything else. So, you know, who knows? News out of Midwestern State, not only did the legislature pass the bill to make them the fifth university in the Texas Tech University system and waiting on the governor's signature, Representative Frank and Senator Drew Springer working hard on that, President Suzanne Shipley has announced her plans to retire. She says this is a good point, you know, a big change in the university, and she's been there a good while. She's the 11th president at Midwestern State in Wichita Falls, and I think she's done a pretty good job. She has announced that she will retire at the end of the state's fiscal year, which again is August 31st. Governor Abbott appointed student regents and representatives, you know, to the Board of Regents Midwestern. He named Amanda Threlkeld of Wichita Falls there to the student regents, and Texas Tech System is a student at Angelo State. Kagan Holt of Seguin named all the other ones for all the other universities. Terrible. Listen to this story. Body found in Jasper motel room believed to be missing child Samuel Olson. This in the Houston Chronicle. A dead body found yesterday evening in a Jasper motel room is to believe that of missing 6-year-old Samuel Olson, who was reported missing from his home in Houston on May 27th, according to the Houston police chief. One possible suspect is in custody and is to be interviewed by the Houston PD. I'm sure they're doing that today. Person who initially reported the child missing told police that Olson was taken from his southwest Houston home by an unknown male. On Monday, police assistant chief said police had yet to verify the credibility of that report, so I'm guessing a family member or somebody involved is probably the top suspect. University of Houston deputy fire marshal says he accidentally fired an AR-15 in the shooting death of a volunteer firefighter. This is a story by Julian Gill in the Houston Chronicle. Deputy fire marshal at the University of Houston told police he accidentally fired an AR-15 on 23 May after tripping over his dog, killing an 18-year-old volunteer firefighter in Waller County. Joshua Michael Hahn's his name. He's been charged with manslaughter. Hahn had worked at the University of Houston since 2018 and also served as a volunteer firefighter. 11 years of experience, a lot of certifications. This happened about 8 o'clock on the 23rd at a home in Waller County. Smith's body, the one who was killed, was found in Douglas Smith, volunteer fire department. Was his body was found in the kitchen. Now, Hahn told responding deputies he had dropped an AR-15, causing it to go off and shoot Smith. That's questionable. He provided a different account in a later interview, saying he pulled the trigger accidentally when he tripped over his dog, and he'd been pointing the muzzle in Smith's direction. So right there, you already have it. Guns don't do this. People do. The rule is to never point a firearm at anything you don't intend to kill. You have it up. Pointing up, straight down, whatever. But anyway, he's changed his story. This story looks bad in that case. And the sad thing is somebody else died. Former Lubbock Christian Schools president that just all of a sudden was relieved or resigned or relieved of his duties back in November. We've learned more. EverythingLubbock.com reported that Ty Rogers, the former president of Lubbock Christian Schools, was caught recording child pornography. Well, I guess maybe under the law it might be called that. It's pederasty of a 15-year-old girl. It's still a minor. Says in October, his wife caught him surreptitiously taking photographs of a 15-year-old minor female as she was naked in the bathroom preparing to take a shower. All this from court records. He admitted to his wife he took several photographs and videos. A colleague confronted him, asked if his wife had caught him on... And he dropped his head and responded, "Yes, I did that. I guess I should resign," or words similar. That was in the court records. He admitted to using his phone to possess child pornography. He accepted a plea deal yesterday, which is why court records were released. Faces up to 10 years in federal prison. Good grief. On a similar note, the Wichita Falls Times Record News reports today that a man's been accused of secretly installing cameras in a victim's house without her knowing about it. They've had an arrest warrant for a man named Brad Colby Berry, and they claim he placed concealed camera devices in the victim's home. Whew, gross. I don't know. You can't explain this kind of stuff because it's by its very nature irrational. And yesterday, Governor Abbott declared disaster declaration for the border counties. The left's going crazy. One piece out today. Governor Abbott declares immigrant children a threat. Orders to withdraw licenses from facilities who shelter unaccompanied minors. There's so much in the border stack. Screaming migrant child abandoned on border riverbank in Texas. This is in the El Paso area, the Rio Grande. The agency France Press actually filmed this. The boy's saying, "Don't go, don't leave." They just put him there, left him there. Migrants march through South Texas neighborhood at night. These people have these swarms of people coming through their neighborhood every night. The Remain in Mexico program is now officially disbanded by the Biden administration, pouring tens of thousands more into this country and destroying one of the best agreements an American president had ever made over that with Mexico. Governor Abbott orders Texas child care regulators to yank licenses of facilities housing immigrant kids, put more pressure on the feds. And then they're really mad in the Rio Grande Valley saying, the Hidalgo County judge saying, look, instead of this disaster stuff, the governor should be helping us get our border bridges fully reopened. And that's a complaint at the Biden administration. It's actually an interesting subject. I'm going to set that aside for the future. Cornyn and some other people are in the valley today. They've got a bipartisan bill to deal with the border and the Border Solutions Act they're trying to drum up support for. There's just so much going on there. My friends, over the week, we'll continue to go through the legislature, the things the ledge did pass, the things they didn't pass. We'll keep you up to date. We're not under a big time pressure for that right at the moment. Until then, long live liberty, long live Texas, and may God bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.